When you choose to earn your degree online from Southern New Hampshire University, you're saying yes to new opportunities and to new adventures. You're saying yes to something big, something you've always wanted to do. If earning your degree is one of your goals this new year, SNHU can help you get there. With low online tuition, no set class times, and multiple term starts per year, you can set the pace that works for you and save money along the way. Visit snhu.edu today to get started.
Hey, listeners, have a gamer on your holiday gift list, but you're still not sure what to get them? Head to Lenovo to shop unexpectedly great deals on tech this season. Gift your number one player with a brand new PC. Help them go beyond performance in game without compromise with Intel Core i9 processors. Gaming happens with Intel. Shop now only at Lenovo.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Right in today's episode, we had live callers call in. We got to coach them on air, but this was after the intro. Today's intro was 52 minutes. That's where we talk about current events, family life, scientific studies on fitness and health, and more. By the way, if you want to call in and be helped on air, email us your question at live@mindpumpmedia.com. This episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Our Place. This is cookware with no forever chemicals. It's cast iron covered in ceramic so things don't stick. By the way, Our Place offers 100-day trial on all of their stuff. So you get free shipping and free returns. You get to try it out for 100 days. Anyway, go to fromourplace.com. Use the code MINDPUMP at checkout. Get 10% off. This episode is also brought to you by Organifi. Organifi makes quality organic supplements. Their top seller is their green juice. This is great for stress. Great to get your body to adapt to stress. Better sleep, better health. Go check them out. Go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/MINDPUMP. Use the code MINDPUMP. Get 20% off. Also, this is early access to Black Friday. Ready for this? All maps bundles, all maps programs, all guides, everything. 60% off. 60% off. Just go to mapsfitnessproducts.com. Use the code Black Friday. By the way, if you get a bundle or a program or a guide, you'll get entries to win a free vacation at the Mind Pump Park City house. This house is optimized for health and biohacking. A bundle gets you 10 entries. A program gets you 5 entries. Everything else gets you one entry. Again, it's also everything 60% off. Go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and the code is Black Friday. All right, here comes the show. Compound lifts before isolation lifts are the best, except when they're not.
Ooh. All right,
let's talk about
it. I like that. I knew you'd like that.
This is maybe because it's my idea.
Yeah. Before we went live, we were just talking about how Sal is so hard. I tried to tell him to say something a certain way, and never fails.
I just forget.
He'll do it his own way, no matter how good I say something.
In your words.
It's got to be his way.
It worked. No, so the rule that and you know, rules in strength training are general rules because most rules can be broken depending on the
context. Would you say that's true?
Mostly.
As I say,
yeah, most things.
Almost every rule, which is why, too, I get so frustrated with social media sometimes when we speak in absolutes and then we battle each other, you know, fitness professionals talking shit about another fitness professional because they're communicating
so much nuance through.
And then somebody comes to the top and says, this is what the study says. It says, well, okay, yeah, in that controlled environment, in that study, in that situation, that is the truth. But there's also situations where I know that's not the truth, and so it's so much more nuanced than that.
Yes,
And it's a good general rule to program compound lifts first, right? And not only that, but the muscle or the area you want to work should be prioritized that way. So the things that's gonna give you the biggest bang for your buck, compound lifts, the muscles that you're trying to focus on first, but there are exceptions to that. And in fact, there's a lot of clients that I would train and we would start with an isolation exercise first.
Yeah, same here. And of course, you know, you have the most energy, so you should do the heaviest lifts, et cetera, et cetera. But if I had a client that had trouble connecting to and feeling a target muscle on a compound lift, because compound lifts use, you know, two joints and they use lots of different muscles for the lift, right? Like a bench press. It's known to be a chest exercise, but it's also using the shoulders and triceps, right? A squat.
Was a big one for me.
Yes.
Getting the glutes to fire and be engaged while going through that compound lift.
That's right. So a lot of women will do squats for their glutes, right? But you're also using your quads and your hamstrings and even your calves to some degree.
Yep.
What if I don't feel the target muscle when I'm doing the compound lift? Well, one of the best things you could do is isolate that muscle for a few sets and then go to the compound lift. Now, there are going to be people who are going to bring up studies and show that, oh, this doesn't change how many muscle fibers you activate, et cetera, et cetera. I disagree completely. And it's not because it's telling your muscles to work differently necessarily. It's just allowing you to feel the muscle that you're trying to work. And then you adjust the technique just enough to be able to do it. Because I noticed when I have clients, for example, if I have female clients that didn't feel their butt when they did squats, and then I had them do some hip bridging or some hip thrusting and then squat, I would notice a difference in their technique. They would use more glutes in the squat because now they felt it from the previous exercise.
It's no different than if you were to run a study that showed that when people are doing a seated row and I poke them in the back, I activate more muscles or not. Like, I don't activate more muscles when I poke them in the back.
You just feel it.
But they feel it more and they have a better understanding of where they should feel it. That's right. And then it allows them
to get
better.
It's a signal for them. Yeah, it's a response
to. So it's very similar to that. It's not, okay, you're right. In a controlled study, you're not going to show that this builds more muscle doing it this way. Therefore, why should we throw it out? No, it's like, you are teaching, like, you use the chest, very, very common. I'd say those are probably two biggest that where I'd use in isolation. Many, many times, if I had a client that wanted to develop their chest and they never felt bench press in their chest, I would lay them on a foam roll on their down their spine, and we would do like a fly, right? And I did that because the way laying on the foam roll would drop their scapula back like they need to be in that position, and doing an isolation
full
fly,
range of motion.
Yeah, full range of motion, real deep. They would it's so hard not to feel your chest in a fly like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. It's like a cheat code for
Yeah. And so now I'm getting them to feel that. And it's like, okay, just like a hip thrust is really hard not to feel your glutes. And so if you get them to feel that and then it clicks, like, oh, okay, that's what I should feel in the movement. Now let me think about that when I go into this squat or this bench press. Made all the difference.
It does. And now here's how they should do a study like that. Like, let's take 50 people who say they don't feel their chest in a bench press, or say they don't feel their glutes in a squat, then have them do this. And then I think what you're going to find is they're able to connect better and activate those muscles a little bit better. I was lucky enough to learn this as a kid. I learned this as a kid because one of the first, you know, written out programs that I followed was a program called Heavy Duty by Mike Mentzer. This is the theory of the program is like low volume, high intensity, et cetera, et cetera. But he used what are called pre-exhaust supersets in that program. And the reason why I use them is because you're doing one set per body part. His theory was you want to pre-exhaust the target muscle with an isolation exercise and then go right to the compound lift. So you get that muscle to go to full failure or whatever. But anyway, you can debate that and argue that. That wasn't the point. The point is, when I did that for my back, now consider I was probably 16 years old, 15 or 16 years old, and I'd been training my back since I was 14, and I'd never gotten a pump on my lats. Never, never happened. Every time I did my back, I'd kind of feel it, but I didn't get a pump. My arms would get pumped, but I never really felt my lats. Well, I did dumbbell pullovers, and then I supersetted that with pull-ups. So I did an isolation lift and then did pull-ups. And I'll never forget that. I stood up. I dropped down from the pull-ups. I went down, but 5 seconds later, I for the first time ever felt a pump in my lats. And that's when I realized, like, oh, it's because I isolated them first. And I use this on clients all the time. Anytime somebody didn't feel a particular muscle, I would isolate the muscle first, go back to the compound lift, and then they knew what to do. Like, oh, I know where I need to feel this. I know what I need to do with my technique and form. And it would change ever so slightly to hit those target muscles. And so this is really effective for people that have trouble connecting to muscles and compound lifts.
Well, this may be a little more on the functional side and less on like trying to maximize muscle pump or muscle build development. Like, so if somebody doesn't feel their core, doesn't feel the engagement there and the bracing mechanism, you know, if I'm not working on that specifically and highlighting that first before I go into a compound lift like a back-loaded squat, you know, then we're gonna have problems. And people do that all the time, where they're just getting into the movement of it and they're not maximizing their stability, they're not maximizing, you know, their mechanics with that, because they're not properly set up, because you need that muscular contraction to really, you know, protect the spine, to give them, you know, the best performance they can achieve.
By the way, studies that support what we're talking about look different. There are studies where people will do a curl with one arm, and then they'll do the curl with another arm. But when they do the curl with the other arm, they think about the bicep contracting and relaxing. They're like focusing on it mentally. And the studies show more muscle fiber activation when they concentrate on the target muscle.
You squeeze out like 10% more.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do here with the isolation exercise first is allow you to feel that muscle. That's it. So now when I go do my squats, my glutes are already a little fatigued. I can feel them while I'm walking. Like, oh, there they are. Now when I do my squat, I know what to do in my squat to make it
hit
my glutes.
You can make micro adjustments too if you have that connection.
That's it, 100%.
I mean, I think this was a solid trainer technique that at one point, if you've been doing this long enough, you figure out.
You have to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, and then it's a go-to. I mean, I actually think that if I were to go back, knowing that the rule of compounds, knowing how we write programs are like that way, right? You'll always see one of our mass programs leads with a compound lift, right? But when I think about the clients that I've trained, many times I probably, if not more times, started with isolation because a lot of clients have a really hard time feeling that. At least maybe maybe if it was chest, maybe I still started with barbell back squats. But then when I got to chest, I would do an isolation exercise first to get them to be able to feel. If they gave me feedback of, I don't feel this in my chest. Like, oh, great. Here, come
here. It's also good for correctional exercise. Physical therapists will do this where somebody will do an overhead press, for example, and they'll say, oh, it hurts my shoulder. And then what a physical therapist will do is, let's say they'll do some kind of rotator cuff exercise. They'll train the infraspinatus or the supraspinatus. So they'll do something like that, right? And they'll do it, you know, let's say external rotation. Then they'll have them do the shoulder press. The person's like, the pain is gone. Well, what just happened? All they did, I mean, technically they fatigued the stabilizer muscle a little bit, but how come they don't feel pain anymore? Because they activated it. And now they changed their form ever so slightly. So I would also do this with correctional exercise. I would do this with abduction, right? Bringing the legs out, adduction, bringing the knees in. I would do this with the ankles. When somebody would notice pain somewhere, a little correctional exercise, which oftentimes correctional exercise resembles isolation movements more than compound lifts, oftentimes, not always. I would do that first. Then they go do the lift and like, oh, I don't hurt anymore. What did you just do? I just got you to feel where you need to feel. I got you to move the way I want you to move. So all we're doing right now is we're explaining what's happening. You don't need to know all this. If you do bench press, if you do rows, if you do overhead presses, you do squats, and you're one of those people, which is like 20%, I would say 20% of people, especially when you first get started, don't feel necessarily the target muscle. Like 20% of people will do back exercises and they'll feel it in their biceps. 20% of people will do chest exercise and they'll feel it in their shoulders and triceps, or they'll do, you know, butt exercises and it's all in their quads. Try and isolate, try a few sets of hitting that target muscle isolation style. Then go to the compound lift, slow down your reps. All of a sudden, you'll be able to feel it. All of a sudden, you'll have the right form.
I mean, talking about correctional stuff too. I mean, here's an example of something I do every single time before I overhead press or before I chest press. I will go over and do suspension trainer W's first.
Yeah.
And it seems counterproductive. Like, oh, you're going to go fatigue yourself doing this, you know, shoulder exercise.
Face pulls,
yeah, or face pulls. Yeah. Like those are also great for that.
Technically, you're fatiguing the stabilizers.
Yeah.
It makes you stronger.
Yes, but then exactly. Watch what happens. I have a way better bench press going in there because I'm moving more optimally. And so there's exceptions to the rule. Like that is not the best way technically to get a bigger bench press. And no study is going to show that that does that. But it's like if you are anything like me where you have forward shoulder rounded shoulders and forward head, getting you in a more optimal position to go bench press is going to result in a better bench press and better results from your bench press. So this is where the exception to the rule is.
This is all about central nervous system training. That's what you're doing when you're doing that, is you're teaching the central nervous system in a very short period of time. It takes a couple sets, sometimes one set, to tell your central nervous system, here's a more optimal way to fire and use the muscles. And so what you end up finding is, by fatiguing a stabilizer muscle, technically, you're stronger. How does that even make sense? Because the CNS now is firing in a more optimal way. And again, physical therapists do this all the time. You can find videos even on social media where somebody isn't able to bring their arm all the way back and a PT will go do a bunch of shoulder exercise and all of a sudden they can bring their arm all the way back. Like, what is going on? Yeah. It's all about the CNS. About the CNS.
You guys seeing all the buzz around the Park City giveaway entries and stuff like that?
Are they going crazy?
Yeah. So it's pretty exciting. Brett was telling me he's getting all kinds of feedback from it already too. So it's off and running and it's going good. And so,
dude, the perfect day there First of all, it's a great location. If you like skiing, it is one of the best places in the world.
What a great excuse to get a nice vacation.
Yes. So, but here's what I like. This is what I like to do when I go there, right? Wake up in the morning. I work out in the morning. I'll go do 1 to 2 minutes in the cold dip and then lift to get the gym right next to it. Then I'll finish with the sauna. Then I'll go do some red light therapy. And then at night you got the sleep system. You're like, you're going to be optimized.
I'm more like hit the hot tub and then watch a movie.
Dude,
that's Sal's routine there. I'm like, you'll catch me in the hot tub checking out the views, and then I'll be watching a movie in the movie
theater. The whole family to do the cold plunge in the morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was crazy.
Who won?
Everett.
He did?
Yeah. Honestly, dude, I felt like that was colder than just adding ice to a bath. Like the temperature of it was like, oh my God, this is brutal.
Oh, it can get colder. I know it can. I don't know what the exact temperature of what a bath gets when you add ice cubes to it.
Yeah.
But the cold plunge can dip colder.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was set at.
I felt it because I think I was just like, you know, it's a competitive thing and I wasn't being competitive. I was just, oh, okay, I'm good. And then Everett gets in there. He's like, no, he's super competitive. Yeah, I was like, awesome. All right, go for it,
buddy. Kid, we have movie posters, right? In the theater.
Yeah, represent all of
that
us.
We all represent.
Yeah,
which one was mine? Rocky? Is it Rocky?
Yeah, yeah. You're the Rocky. Rocky one. There's a Goonies which one in there.
Goonies.
There was, what was I? I don't remember what mine was.
A Few Good Men?
Days of Thunder. A few Good Men. You're right.
A Few Good Men.
Yeah, yeah.
What's Doug's?
Top Gun.
Yeah,
Top Gun. It wasn't a talkie.
Star Wars. Charlie Chaplin, yeah.
And then there was Star Wars, that's right.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's so great.
Don't we have The Usual Suspects as well?
Yeah, that's what it was.
I mean, Usual Suspects and Few Good Men are like two of my favorite movies. You've never seen Usual Suspects?
I've also never seen A Few Good Men.
Bro, that was my nickname in college, dude. Kaiser.
Those are like two of my all-time favorite movies.
Never saw them.
Oh, they're so good. Yeah. They're both great.
Those aren't just good. Those are two of my all-time favorite movies.
Legendary.
Yeah. I know, you talk about them all the time.
Wow, I did not know you've never seen
them. I almost put Memento.
Bro, put that on your list. That's like a great Friday, Saturday.
You know what it is?
What is it? Because I'm telling you.
The cover?
Fucking guy.
No, that's not exactly what it is.
Remember how long
how we started the show?
Remember how long it took him to watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
I still didn't watch the whole thing. I still watch. You know what it is?
Let me tell you.
It has nothing to do with the fact that you like it at all.
Yeah.
Because that movie was popular forever, way before I knew you. That was the 90s, right?
Yeah, it's been around for a long time.
I'm going to date myself. You go to Blockbuster and you get the box. And the picture on the box, what is it? It's a couple guys in suits or, well.
Yeah.
Not exciting. Throw it away.
I mean, exploding. Quentin Tarantino, all his covers look like that too. So how do you discern?
That's weird logic.
Yeah.
I didn't say weird. I'm just telling
that
you.
That is the weirdest logic I've ever heard. Because the Blockbuster cover of the movie.
Pull up the movie poster. Hey, There's nothing exciting about it.
Hey, forget it. It got like 99 on Rotten Tomatoes and people have been talking about it for decades. It's got a terrible.
It's so long now, know that? Movie. I don't even want to go. You know what I mean?
Know.
It's so long now.
It's so good. Like, first of all, Usual Suspects, there's nothing.
That's
like
the one. Is that the one where he says, you can't handle the truth, right?
No, that's
a Few Good Men.
Which is a good movie.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, okay, oh, cool. It's like a military, is American flag.
I don't think I've ever picked a movie based off of the cover.
I'm just telling you, I know it's illogical. I'm just telling you right now, it doesn't sell me.
Oh, yeah. Pull up Usual Suspects. That one doesn't sell you either. I mean, I'm trying to think. Show me a cover that sells you. I want to know what's on.
Well, so Rocky I had to watch because he's Italian. Same thing with Godfather.
He's like, Critter, yes.
Yeah.
There's a predator.
I mean, Usual Suspects looks interesting, doesn't that?
No,
they're all in a lineup. No. That looks, I don't know.
It's like a lineup of guys.
That movie is so good that I can tell you, you'll watch it. You will not get the twist in it. I'm telling you, there's a twist in it. You won't get it.
Look at that.
That's what gets his attention.
Look at Predator.
It's got to be muscles.
Right away. Yeah. I want to watch that right now.
Bro, you're like 12. You're like 12 still.
He's like an action hero.
Hey, when I was a kid, you know what I used to do when I go to Blockbuster? I'd go in the horror section.
Yeah.
And just look at the boxes.
I did too.
Because they were. Well, there was one movie that was so.
80s gore was my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah.
They did. Went crazy with that.
Insane.
That's all they. There was one movie where
like tomato soup that just
there was a whole series of movies. So Gremlins came out. That was popular in the 80s, which by the way, don't show your kids. If you got kids, And you're my age.
Most 80s movies I've learned.
Really scary, bro. I showed my kids when they were too young. And remember when they microwaves, the gremlin explodes in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my kids had nightmares. I was so stupid. There was a whole slew of movies that followed with little monsters that were that big, and there were different names for them.
Yeah.
There was one where he's like coming out of the toilet. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember
what is that?
I don't know, but I mean, the Critter was one of them.
Critters was one of them. And then there was another one where he's like, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't remember the names, but I was definitely.
He's like in a toilet.
Remember that? Scary face? Remember that clown, like clowns from space.
Your guys' taste in movies is so suspect, bro.
Bro, look
hilarious.
Look at Critters movie poster. Watch this, bro. Oh,
I think I remember.
It wasn't Critters. No. Critters.
That's there, right
there. Ghoulies.
Ghoulies.
There you go.
Ghoulies. I forgot about Ghoulies.
I remember I watched that and I was a kid, right? You know how terrifying that is to have a monster in the toilet when you're a kid?
Of course.
Look at that.
Terrifies me now.
Yeah. I mean, I cannot believe you, bro. Those are such
killer clowns from outer space. Sorry.
Yeah.
You can't watch either Few Good Men or Usual Suspects and not like it. I don't know anybody who has watched that and said,
you know, it's one of my favorite.
It may not be your favorite movie, like it's one of mine. But
now, do you guys have a favorite movie that's embarrassing? Like if you say it, you're like,
Rad.
Really good.
What Rad?
Oh yeah.
Remember what my poster?
That's not embarrassing.
I mean, it's kind of.
No, that's like a total kid movie for dudes. Like, there's no embarrassing movie.
Oh, I got one for you. I got one. Devil Wears Prada.
That's one of your favorite movies.
I like that movie a lot.
That is so.
That's embarrassing, right?
You. Wow. That's so you.
It doesn't make sense.
Why is that so me, bro?
Because you probably think you love her. You love that character.
Fashion.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, see, I do.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie. Yeah,
she's like a badass boss.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
You've seen that, right, Doug?
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
It's kind of a chick movie, and I like it.
Yeah, there's a few of them that are pretty good.
I'd say that's probably the most.
You know what I like?
That I'm most embarrassed to admit that I would, you can get me to rewatch.
I'll tell you one that's worse than that. I watched this movie several times. Really good. It's a love story. Chocolat. Have you seen that?
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. That's Johnny Depp, right?
That's like The Notebook. I've never sat through either one of those.
I'll never watch that.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of those.
No.
That was actually a decent movie.
I watched Dirty Dancing for the first time when I started dating Jessica.
Oh, that's good.
She was no, it wasn't. She was convinced me it would be good, and I watched it. I'm like, it's not good.
It wasn't bad. It was good.
It's not.
It's an 80s movie. It's hard to say. Like, you can't compare, like.
Yeah, like Breakfast Club, but that's not embarrassing.
No, Breakfast Club.
Oh, that's great. A classic.
Yeah, dude. Like,
that's not embarrassing. All the other stuff you watch is embarrassing.
A lot of those. I do a lot of, like, really bad.
You and Sal could just list up like 10 movies you see.
Yeah, I used to like watching really bad movies, though, because, you know, then you could just throw popcorn at it and talk shit the whole time.
I never watched what's that one with the transvestites from space?
Oh yeah,
what?
You know, dude. As soon as I say it, you're gonna know. It's
Rocky Horror Picture
Rocky
Show.
Horror Picture Show.
Oh, I've never.
I've
seen
actually.
That.
I've seen okay, that, yeah. That's embarrassing. When I went to a showing,
of course,
of Rocky Horror, and it was downtown Santa Cruz, and everybody's all dressed up and drag and all this weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, what did I just say? But it was fun. Everybody's like, you know, really getting into it.
And they'll say the lines and stuff. Yeah. You know which one movie that is, right?
I don't.
Look it up, Doug. So
it's like a musical.
Rocky Horror Film?
Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's a cult classic.
I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't think I've heard of it. I know I haven't watched it.
Time for this.
See, I remember the song. It's what's his name? What is his name?
Dude, I love that you pick apart covers and that you actually chose that cover like Tim you grab that cover at Blockbuster and you're like, this Few Good Men looks like terrible. Wow. I'm gonna watch this one.
This one's appealing.
No, I didn't see that.
I know, right up my alley.
Fishnet stockings.
A dude wearing panties.
Yeah, bro, like, okay, explain the logic behind that that cover for me, bro.
I never watched it, but okay. I know it was a cult classic. Okay, and one. I brought it up because I knew Justin watched it.
Damn it.
I was having a conversation with my son. He's like super into, like, which is cool. He likes learning like science stuff and whatever.
That's cool.
Book on the brain. We have a book on reading about dinosaurs, carnivorous plants. You guys know that. So today he was, this morning, in fact, before I came here, I'm reading him a book. And you know, little kids have no concept of like time, right? Yeah. Like to them, a long time. They don't know, right?
Yeah, a day is a long time for them.
They just don't know, right? Yeah. So he's talking to me. I was cracking up. He goes, Papa, dinosaurs, they existed a long time ago. I said, yeah. And he goes, more than 50,000 weeks ago. I mean, I guess so.
Bro. You're right.
50,000 weeks ago is a lot.
Right. I know. I like technically when Max does stuff like that. Oh my God. Right now, he is like, super. When he's sick, man, he is not attached to his mom, overly sensitive. You cannot joke with him. You can't do anything.
Katrina, you get this feeling, sir?
Oh, dude, Katrina. So last night, so
he's just,
he's on the mint. No, I know better. Like I leave the two of them. Like literally, I don't. When Max is sick, I don't see Katrina and them for like days. Like they literally just they stay on their side of the house. He's attached to her. She can't even go to the bathroom without him going like, "Where are you going? Bring me with you." And she's like, "Oh my god, I can't even." Oh yeah, he's like that, dude. It's crazy. So he's starting to feel better, and she's talking to him, and he goes, "Mommy, what happens if you get sick?" And then she goes, "Well, then you're gonna have to take care of me." He goes, just starts crying. What? Like, and she goes, "Honey, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That's not a funny joke." No. The next 10 minutes, he's crying. No, it's like, you can't fuck with him, dude. You can't. Right at that time, he's so.
Has he ever followed you to the bathroom? Does he ever do that?
Oh, when he's healthy, he does that. When we went through a phase, I don't know if you went through this at all, but you guys remember, I talked about this on the podcast. There was a time when, I want to say when he was about 1.5 to 3, where there was actually a period of time for probably even a little less than that, maybe a year, where I couldn't leave his sight. If I left the room,
he was glued to you.
Yeah. He had to go with me. And I literally had to carry him. If I went to the bathroom, I'm holding him, going to the bathroom. I would like, if I was home and daddy was home, he had to be wherever I was at. It did not matter where I was.
So my son will do this in the morning. Like, "I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm coming with you." Well, I had to go. I had to go number two. So I said, okay. I brought him in. He don't come to the bathroom no more.
Oh, that's really?
It. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. That was the last time.
He's all fireworks. No,
he's sitting there, and we're just talking. He's like, "Tell me a story." So I'm telling a story, and he starts to make a face. He's like, "I don't want to be in here anymore." I'm like, you wanted to be in here, bro. Now you got to stay in here, buddy.
I'm gonna go get some matches.
And then my almost 2-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. When I go pee, I don't want her in there anymore because I would go pee and she would chill. But now she looks up like, "Huh?" And I'm like, "All right, you're gonna get to the age where you remember
too much
this.
Investigating.
So you got to get out of here.
No more.
You don't
no
need
more.
To check.
I don't want no memories.
Wizard sleeve anymore.
Yeah. You know, we create a monster.
What? Did you say wizard sleeve? That's not me, bro. That's not me, buddy. European Catholic. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You never know. I didn't check.
No, you didn't.
So, assuming.
So we're trying to backpedal right now because I think I told you guys this too on the show, that one of the things I love that he does is he's definitely a negotiator, but he negotiates everything now. And so I hear Katrina in the other room.
Let him have it though.
Yeah, that's how I feel, man. I'm like,
it's a good skill.
I like that skill. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so.
It's very good skill.
So long as we go back and forth and he is open. Like, it's not just, it's not like he tries to negotiate and then he cries. He doesn't get his way. It's like, he'll keep going. You can keep going with him. Like, wow. Okay. If we do that, then you only get one book. And if we do that, then tomorrow we have to do this. Like, you could go back and forth with him and then finally be like, okay, that's a deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, he'll do that. And so, but the other day, Katrina, I was teasing Katrina. I came home. I had pulled out some cash and I put it on the counter. And, Katrina moved it. And I was like, "Did you take my money?" I guess he overheard it. And so yesterday, that money was in our drawer in the kitchen or like that. And she was pulling it out and he saw her and he's like, "Did you take daddy's money?" Like that? Yeah. And she's like, "Daddy's money is mommy's money." "No, it's not. That's daddy's money." It's like that.
Did you hear it?
Yeah.
Did you jump in and say
no, something? No, I wasn't there. I wasn't. This is Katrina telling me afterwards. Okay. She's like getting on to me. "You know, you got to be careful what you say around him about our money." You know what I'm saying? I said, "Why? Did you take my money?" She's like, "That's right.
I got eyes everywhere."
Yeah. I'm like, "Don't be taking my money. I got my son on you." You know what I'm saying? I'll call you out on that shit.
that's so good. That's funny. I love that stuff.
Is he still selling to his family members?
Yeah, he's definitely.
Oh, yeah, the pictures, right?
Yeah, the pictures.
He's definitely. That's my favorite trait currently about him right now is the negotiating. His ability to, for a kid who feels like his vocabulary was behind, his communication skills, his negotiation skills, his understanding of selling to get what he wants, like that's like ahead. So he was behind forever on speech and vocabulary and all those things, but he seems so advanced when it comes to like understanding like the art of a deal.
Is he still super into math? Is he still like that?
Oh yeah, he's really good at math. Math has been.
What's that show you have him watch?
Number Blocks, bro.
That's the one.
It's okay. I can't. I mean,
I was trying to remember the other day,
and I don't know if I had quite a few people after I talked about it on the show that they got their kids into it, and they said the same thing. They swore like, "Oh my God!" Same thing with my kid. I mean, some kids take to it, some kids don't. I don't know. I think that's for everybody. Like, I mean, look at your son with the science thing right now. Like, he's once they become obsessed. Like
you gotta let them go with it.
You lean into it, right? Hard. And then they'll go keep going.
If they're like, obsessed, let them be obsessed and go with it.
That's how I was.
They'll learn and remember.
Yeah, that's how I was with number blocks, and it didn't take long for me to see it where I was like, oh shit, this kid he barely could count to like 25, and then all of a sudden he's counting to 100. He's adding, he's subtracting, and I was like, it's wild. So we could do stuff, and I love to challenge him like this now is where. He'll see something that'll be like, and for a kid that age, they don't even teach addition yet, right? Right now it's just counting. Like you're pre-kindergarten, you're counting. They don't add and subtract, but he's already adding and subtracting. And he's not just adding and subtracting, he's like adding complex numbers. And I can do things now with him because of that number blocks, they teach him how to count in fives and tens, in twos and multiples of threes.
Oh, wow.
So I can do things with them where a number will be like 20 plus 12. You know, which would, for a kid that age, that would be really hard. And he'll sit on there and you can see him trying to figure it out and go, well, what's 20 plus 10? He's got that right away. 30. Okay. Two more, son. Oh, 32. Like, so he's,
oh, good.
Like, he's learning how to break it down really fast, like, because he's been taught all the multiples. Oh, okay. If it's 10 plus 20, I know that right away because I already know how to count.
And then you just add two.
And then I just add two.
Yeah. We just got this, this toy. It's not a toy, it's a learning thing, but it's got these two hands on it like this, and they're Velcro. And it comes with numbers. And so you put one number up here and then you move the fingers down to match whatever's on the number. So it's all kinesthetic plus the numbers and it adds up. And so now he's learning how to do that with his fingers, with the hands.
You know what your son would be good for right now? He's at that age. I have a bunch if you want them because Max hasn't used them in a long time. But have you seen the leapfrog of they touch the words and it reads it?
Yeah, we have that.
Oh, you do have
that?
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah, that one's money too. Like that, I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Like, so the kids touch the words, they see the word, they hear the word, and then so he can read the book to himself. Like, I think that was a great tool. Yeah. We use that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the things that, I mean, we have a lot and we've tried a lot of different things. There's certain things like number blocks, like the leapfrog reading that, you know, I saw us implement it and I went, oh, wow, I saw the
you know, it's funny. A study just, I pulled up a study. In fact, I saved it to bring it up because you just reminded me of it. There's a study that was done on exercise and mental health for children. This was done. This was at a Finland, and the summary says a recent study found that good physical fitness from childhood to adolescence is linked to better mental health in adolescence. So the connecting physical fitness to better mental health.
Of course,
there's a couple reasons for this. One is the brain is a physical part of the body, so when you have a healthy hardware, you're less likely to be depressed, less likely to be anxious because the brain itself is healthy. But I also think there's another part, which is there's a learning that happens from kinesthetic, from movement.
Yes.
And in the brain, the way the brain develops when you're young, this is different when you're older. When you're older, getting very specialized is a good idea. But when you're younger, and we see this in studies on athletic performance, a child that does five different sports growing up will do better at one sport later that they really like than if they focused on just that one sport their whole life.
Because their body can react and adjust to like certain variables. If you're not exposed to those variables,
that's right,
in this one sport only, then you're not going to be, you know, as accomplished of an athlete.
When you're a child, your brain is so plastic and so moldable and so shapeable that you're better off developing the whole thing. So if you develop the whole thing, which includes music, language, movement, touch, emotion, all that stuff, the more you develop all of them, the better you develop each of them.
Well, it also highlights how the body and the brain adapts, and it adapts in both directions.
Yeah.
I mean, even as we age, forget just when you're a kid, like, okay, when you're a kid, you do all those things for what the point Justin made. But if we don't do those things, then the brain says there's no need for it. There's no need for me to know what a 360 twist and crossover is, because in my sport, I don't need that. So therefore, I don't understand. My body doesn't need to communicate and speak to those muscles.
Never been challenged in that
direction. Versus the kid who's tried all the different sports that challenges in all different planes and all different ways of stability and in all the different directions. And it's like, oh, okay, this is familiar. So that when those unfamiliar, you know, things happen, their bodies go,
well, not to mention the skills you develop, right? So that you can apply that will give you an advantage over the other competitors.
And it's not just physical though. What I'm trying to express here is when you're young, the brain grows so fast when you're a kid, right?
It's all like data that you're learning.
And developing the entirety of the brain means that each individual part develops better. So in other words, rather, if you want your kid to be a math whiz, you're better off having them learn a lot of different things.
Music.
Than just math, okay? Even though you're going to spend more time on just math, they'll be worse off than if they develop the brain in the entirety. Now, later on, as you get older, then it becomes specialized. Then it's like, okay, focus all your time on this one thing. But if you don't develop the kinesthetic awareness and touch and emotion and music and all these different things, you actually hurt these other things. And we know this now. So we've taken a lot of these things out of school thinking we need to focus all of our energy on STEM. And what we're finding is that kids are actually getting hurt because they don't. And music is a big one. Music's
huge. It's huge.
It's a very, very big one.
I love that for learning. You talk about kinesthetic. Have you guys seen now they have these tiles? I guess it's in Japan where they have these sort of sensors that you step on top of the tiles and it compresses it. It captures that energy. So literally, you know, that they're putting them out on walkways, and so they can actually collect
energy and then translate it
to a battery.
What?
Yeah, that's great.
It makes perfect sense. I remember a long time ago, there was a gym in Oregon that was like trying to develop this entire, like, it was almost like,
no, it was brilliant. Like all the treadmills, all the things like that was supposed to power the facility.
Do you remember how it worked? So you paid a membership, but you could take the price of the membership down.
That's what we thought would be a good idea. I think we said
that. Is that what we said?
Yeah, we said that.
We did.
Yeah, we said
that. I feel like they were working on that. I don't know if it ever became a public thing.
Oh, this is how this works right here, huh?
That's the kinesthetic tiles.
Yeah.
People walking.
Yeah, so it powers the lights.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just love innovations. It's like, it seems like, you know, they're just maximizing opportunities. So it's not like we're doing anything different. We're just, you know, capturing energy now.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I want to look up the gym thing that we're talking about, because I do remember talking about that way back when. I think it was our idea. I think we brought that gym.
We added that.
And then I think we said, you know what would be cool is what you would do is you would give them a price. And then you could work it down. That was our idea. That wasn't something being done.
I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
that's really cool.
No, it is a good idea. And I don't know why that wouldn't have taken off. I mean, it makes sense that a gym like that.
It does, but I wonder how efficient and effective it is. Because, okay, so let's use the example of the tiles, right? Mm-hmm. Sounds like a brilliant idea, except how long does it take to offset the energy and the cost of producing and creating and
repairing them and you know, who knows
if what the wear is on that. If it doesn't offset the energy that's used to do that, then it's actually not efficient. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's what people
need. It's kind of like wind power and stuff like that, where you're like, oh no, when you actually look into it in terms of like it disrupting the environment. And, you know, I guess there's like been a big problem with whales because of the vibration, sound. The sound. It's actually been beaching a lot of whales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
The wind farms, because of the sound and the vibrations that they're producing, it's causing, because whales are very sensitive to
sound.
Mm-hmm. And it's causing them to beach and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah. Almost like it's communicating to them. And so they don't.
I think it's just confusing.
It's like an annoying. Yeah. It disrupts their whole pattern.
You know, that's what the
navigational pattern.
What's even more weird, like, how do you make that connection? Like all of a sudden these whales are getting beat somewhere and you're just like, oh, it's definitely the windmills.
Yeah, I don't know what
they mean. I mean, like,
I don't know. Somebody's been studying it.
Yeah, like who made that connection? Like who would have thought like, oh, whales are getting beached?
Marine biologists.
Must be the windmills around the corner. Like that, I wouldn't even think that.
No, I know that like great white sharks have never been able to be kept in captivity because of something to do with how they sense their surroundings.
Oh man, that reminded me of in South Africa, I believe. There was an orca that they found, like, it was on a killing spree. It killed like 14 great whites. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Bro. Yeah. They're getting so much. I swear, if there's any species out there that's like evolving right in front of us. It's the orca.
Have you seen them hunt?
Yeah.
Some of the ways that they hunt?
I have. And they're taking out boats now.
But I didn't know it's evolving. I thought it's always been like
they have. There's different pods of orcas. Will have different hunting techniques and they'll learn from each other.
Like I know I've seen those videos where they all work together like to get to a seal, get the wave, to get the seal to fall off the ice, and it's pretty wild to watch them do stuff like that.
Yeah,
crazy. I didn't know that was like technically evolving though. That's wild.
Speaking of the environment and stuff, I was reading up on these, what are they called, forever chemicals. It's a class of chemicals that are in like nonstick cookware. It's in clothing. It can be in sprayed on surfaces. They call them forever chemicals because they stick around.
They last,
and they do affect the body. I looked up forever chemicals and what they're most strongly connected to. Testicular and kidney cancer were the strongest connections.
That's not good.
Yeah, those are the strongest connections, although they've also been connected to cardiovascular issues and other cancers. And these chemicals are disgusting. You know that they're finding it in rain? Yeah,
really?
Yeah, a lot of different places. In fact, it's almost impossible if you live in a modern society to be completely rid of them. Basically, basically what you're doing is managing your exposure.
But Teflon's a big one, right? A big contributor to that.
Your cookware is huge. Cookware is a big one. Mm-hmm. So do not use cookware that has any of these forever chemicals. There's a company we just started working with called Our Place.
Oh, that's the name of the company.
Our Place.
The pans that we have?
Yes. So they're cast iron.
They're awesome.
They're coated in ceramic, I believe.
Ceramic, yes.
So it's easy, nonstick, whatever, but no forever chemicals.
We use them like crazy. I don't know if you guys do or not.
Super high quality.
Yeah, they are. They're really nice.
And I love cast iron. The way it heats things up and everything, it's just so.
I have some family. You know my cousin who lives up in Seattle. Like they're like super, organic everything and like homeschool all the good stuff, right? And she found out that we were partnered with them. She like freaked out. Oh my god, it's like my favorite brand.
Really?
Yeah. They had already had like their whole house already done in them. And I mean, Katrina and I remember when we first got them before we even partnered with them. Like I was like, oh, these are awesome. So excited to work with them. I didn't know that we continued. I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of partners, we got our Organifi report. So that for people that know that, that's the company. We've been with them the longest, right? Of all sponsors.
Yeah. They have to be the longest. Yeah.
Yeah. The top seller by far is their green juice. Still. Still.
I just had some right now.
Still.
Number one.
Yep. Always is. And they've been selling green juice now for a long time. They were the first ones, popular ones.
Yeah,
they were one of the first ones.
How much for
at least 10 years?
I say most people became a whole section or Athletic Greens. Yeah. How far back do they go in comparison to the two?
Yeah, so I was looking that up earlier, and we met Drew with Organifi back in I think 2013.
Yeah,
and so they were doing the greens back then.
Yeah. But they'd already been doing them for a few years.
Yeah,
so they've got to have been around for at least 13, 14, maybe 15 years.
I mean, you got to credit Drew that he's been on the front end of a lot of.
I would have never thought a green juice as a supplement even 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But they crush. It's the number one bestseller because of the re-signs or how many people repurchase.
I mean, it makes the most sense in the case like we're, at least how I use it, right? So, and I got called out recently. The people were, because I've been obviously showing my food every day. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you don't eat a lot of vegetables.
Where's your greens?
Yeah, they're like, you don't eat a lot of it. And I don't. Because when I prep, I cannot stand reheated vegetables. Like, that is just, ugh.
Really?
Yeah.
You like reheated vegetables?
I'll just eat it.
That's not like vegetables already are not like the top of the list for me as it is. I mean, I like
olive oil. Let's throw some olive oil on it.
Reheated?
Yeah.
All soggy.
Even it's all mush.
Yeah. Soggy broccoli or soggy asparagus?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no. I got a problem with it. So when I normally prep, and the way it works is the meal I make that night, we almost always have some like spinach, asparagus, or something, or like broccoli or whatever with the dinner. But then when I prep the meals, I just do rice and the meat. I mean, it's almost always rice and meat, or sweet potato and meat, or white potato and meat.
So you just do the green juice,
and then I just pay attention, like to my digestion, my energy, stuff like that. And it's like, and I'm like, oh, okay, it's been a few days of like eating like that, and then I'll just make sure to introduce it.
Speaking of food, I just read a study on toddlers. Toddlers, 50% of the of their diet is heavily processed food. The average toddler,
50%,
half, and this is exceptionally. Wow. Yeah. Bad because children are developing their eating habits and their palate. at that age. This is when they develop the this is why it's so important.
Into their preferences later on.
It's so important to introduce little kids to different textures and flavors and whatever, because you actually develop it for the rest of their life. So these are kids, they're eating processed foods half, at least half the time. You're setting them up.
It was when we had Max, that was a popular question that I always thought was really interesting. People were always asking, like, oh, what do you feed him and how do you feed him? I'm like, he eats what we eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, from a very, very young, I mean, obviously we had to sometimes had to tear it up into tiny little pieces when he was barely developing.
Blended up when he was real tiny.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he ate exactly what we ate. Like, we didn't get, like, we ate and then I gave him a jar of baby food or some shit. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, we're eating chicken and sweet potato today. You're eating chicken and sweet potato today. Mm-hmm. We're having steak and rice day. You're eating steak and rice day. It was like the norm. And like, I don't know. I don't, it's interesting that, I mean, to me, I think that highlights how conditioned we are to marketing and advertising.
Yes.
Because so many commercials are, so much money is put into commercials of all these baby foods, and they're convenient. So I get it, right? Cause it's like, there's a convenient factor. And then the marketing factor of like, they make you think that this is a better, healthier choice. It's like, no, a better, healthier choice is to feed your kid the way you take care of and feed yourself.
There is no such thing as baby food.
Yeah.
You know, toddler food. There's food.
Yeah.
And you just cut it up smaller.
Let's see. Just make it smaller.
Yeah. I remember when my 4-year-old was, he started moving into solids, more solids. Jessica was just blending. We actually broke 3 blenders because of this. She would blend tri-tip and sweet potato, just and it was his favorite thing. Oh, he got husky. He got real thick. He loved it.
He's on that bulk.
Oh yeah,
it's so good too though, because I really think, I know Justin's talked a little bit about this because he's admittedly was different with the 2 kids, right? And I think you've admitted that you see the difference as they got older with their palates and how their eating habits are. And I feel like Max is such a good eater, but I think it's because of the foundation that we laid. Everything from the way we were with sweets to the way we were with Whole Foods. So food is not, like, we haven't had this battle that so many of my friends have all gone through. Like, almost every one of my friends have gone through a food battle with their kids at some point in their early 5 years.
You can still win the battle, though, I'll tell you that.
I'm sure you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like a hopeless thing, yeah. But yeah, it is. I mean, if you set them up, it's so important because then, yeah, you won't have quite as much of the challenge later because that's what they're going to prefer.
Yeah.
Justin, I was going to ask you, you had said in a text a few days ago, maybe a week ago, about the gym in Santa Cruz that they're building or whatever.
Oh yeah. I was trying to tell you guys how awesome this new facility is going to be, and we got to be members. Like, it's insane.
So why is it so?
My buddy Chris.
Yeah, Chris. So they own the Santa Cruz Power Fitness right now. And we went over there to kind of highlight, you know, his business and kind of get some insight on like how he runs it and like how they became successful and whatnot for the coaches. Cause you know, we thought that like a lot of our coaches and trainers, like we'd like to give them examples of like somebody who's, you know, been able to kind of make it through a lot of the trials and tribulations of that. Cause it's really hard. I mean, we literally deter people from the idea of like owning a gym.
Yeah.
And so to get somebody that can actually articulate it and like highlight all these like, problems they had and were able to overcome was really cool. But anyway, this new facility they're building, it's huge. It's right next to this Whole Foods. It's a sports club. And so it's like you go in there and to the left is going to be like all recovery. It's going to have
that's like a thing now they're putting in all of them. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. So here's one thing that I thought was brilliant. I don't know if Camille, like, I don't think she like invented it, but her idea, they looked into it and they got kind of a way to kind of figure this out. So instead of having cold plunges, you know, that occupy a bit of space, like they turned that into a shower. They call it snow shower. And so
that's smart.
So they can, but they have to outfit the piping and everything so it can keep that really cold temperature and that's not smart. Freeze. And so you go in and it's like 40 degrees and so they're going to have it so you can kind of taper the temperature. And so you can like start with like a little bit warmer and you can kind of like titrate it down. And then I'm like, yeah, do the Wim Hof like method right there. Boom. And then, you know, you have your red light therapy, you have like, this whole section in the back for trainers to train them in their own private little section. There's the open floor is going to be, it's very like kid and parent friendly. Like they thought of this whole thing where, you know, they'll have a space where they basically can, they can tutor and then have them go through also like almost like a physical education with that and like programming. And then the local, everything, all the contractors too that he hired are all local. And so it's like, it pulls the community in, like pulls all the schools in. I just think he's onto something with this. It just looks beautiful.
You know, sometimes I miss, sometimes, not often, because it takes so much energy, but you guys know, but sometimes I miss working in a gym.
It's a fun culture.
It's a fun culture. Yeah. You got music going, people are working out.
I miss that vibe. There was something
It's just a lot of energy. You guys know, it's exhausting. I would
walk into it, yes.
I wouldn't trade what we do for a minute for that. Even if I made the same kind of money, I still wouldn't
trade. It's just a lot of energy.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot, but it's rewarding and it's fun and it's so unique. Like, what else is like that? Like, there's not a lot of careers or jobs that are like that.
No, everybody's in a good mood usually. It's hyped and it's great. And
I mean, what is kind of unique that I think is really special about our space or being a trainer, if your peer, like how often and what other careers can you guarantee that all of your peers and your coworkers are all growth minded?
Like, they typically are.
Yeah, you are. Yep. I mean, if you are in pursuit of health and wellness and bettering yourself, right. Like it automatically creates kind of a bias of that, type of people. And even though there's obviously a huge eclectic group of different types of trainers and there's people you're going to probably like and not like, that's like inevitable, it does at least create a commonality in all of us, where a lot of jobs that doesn't necessarily, you could be a whole group of engineers and you have really different type, maybe a personality similarities, but that like having all that in, like a core common thing like that. I don't know. I feel like that's
I worked in the banking industry for a very short period of time and hated it.
How long did you last again? It was very long at all.
I almost thought you said baking.
No, I was in the baking industry. Yeah. Imagine being baking.
How long was it? It wasn't very long, was it?
No, I got in. I was a premier banker for Bank of America. And then I got my Series 6 and 63 license. And then shortly after, opened up my studio. This was way back in the day. But so it must have been a 6-month process. But you know, sitting in a bank, you know what it sounds like when you sit in a bank? You hear the AC. That's what you hear. You hear whoosh. And when you talk like this. Everybody talks like this. And everybody goes to lunch. And then they come back. Yeah. And everybody gone by 5 o'clock. And I can't walk in and yell, yeah, what's up? What's happening?
Bro,
you know how people told me to keep it down in the bank?
So
it was the worst.
And banks are like known for like there's super traffic times and then there's dead times like crazy, right? So what does a banker normally do when there's nobody?
When it's
11 a.m. on Tuesday.
Nothing.
Just sit there.
Nothing.
Calls, anything?
Yes. Calls, but not really. I was making calls.
Like, who you calling?
And the bank manager.
Oh, yeah, I listen to my podcast.
You know how often this happened? I'd make a call because remember, I was investment. So my job was to get people who had certain size accounts to want to do investments or whatever.
Okay, so what you would do is you probably got a whole bunch of leads from the bank of like, hey, these are everybody who have $1 million in their account.
Call them. I'm on the phone calling, and this happened enough times to where I was like, I can't stand this. I'm on the phone, and I got sales in my blood, right? I'm on the phone talking. Bank manager will come back. Can you please keep it down? I'm like, oh, what the fuck? I can't sell.
I was about to ramp it up.
You know, I can't do this, you know? It was the only time in my life where I watched the clock. I'd never done that before. Where I'm looking at the clock. When's lunchtime? Like, get me out of here.
I remember watching the clock. Yeah, having a job where you watch the clock is like painful.
Nightmare.
Yeah, dude. When I worked assembly line stuff in factories, it was like that.
No, nightmare.
Never do that. Never
any
had
desk job.
Yeah, no. any job where you watch the clock, it's like painful.
It's painful.
People that work that way every day, dude.
Yeah, I know. That's, and God bless you, man. You're honest. You work hard. Good. You know, good for you.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. The gym, totally different. Yeah. Totally different. Sometimes I miss it.
Grim.
Shout out.
Yeah, I'm gonna shout out Chris and Santa Cruz Power Fitness. So let's see, what's his handle?
Chris Ellis IFBB Pro. So it goes Chris_Ellis_IFBB_Pro.
There you go.
Yeah, great gym.
Go give him some love.
Element is an electrolyte powder you put in your water. No artificial sweeteners, no sugar. It adds the right amount of sodium to give you better workouts, better pumps, more energy. and it tastes amazing. Go check them out. It's the best electrolyte powder you'll find anywhere. Go to drinklmnt.com/mindpump. On that link, you'll get a free sample pack with any drink mix purchase. All right, back to the show.
Our first caller is Abby from Texas.
Hi, Abby.
How you doing, Abby?
How you doing?
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good.
We're doing great. Good. How can we help you?
How are you?
Good, yeah. So first off, just wanted to say thank you for all the content, all the resources y'all put out there. It's helped me as an athlete, as a trainer, and overall person, so I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
So I'll just jump right in. So I'll kind of read off what I put in the email, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
So I've been playing sports my entire life. Found a passion for beach volleyball in the beginning of high school and pursued that. Committed to playing college, played all 4 years in college, found a love for strength training and nutrition throughout high school and college as well. My own goals were usually pushed aside as a student athlete, as I couldn't go on a cut or do the training that I particularly wanted to do, as I had, you know, to put my sport first. So I've kind of always looked forward to graduating and, you know, getting outside of sports so that I could train and eat how I wanted without the restraints. So now that I'm graduated, I'm working in the fitness industry, and I've kind of, you know, asked myself what's next for me. My mind has often wandered towards bodybuilding, but I wouldn't pursue that fully as to go compete on stage, but rather as my own journey to commit to and document. Just a goal to pursue, to challenge myself again. It intrigues me, but my mind and body, you know, it kind of worries me the short and long-term effects of that. So I've also thought about powerlifting or weightlifting, and if that would be a better route, as they both have the competitive atmosphere as well and a challenge that I can pursue. So I'm just kind of struggling with what direction I want to pursue, which one's the healthiest option for me and most attainable. And just as like a follow-up question to whatever y'all do say, like, how do I approach my training and nutrition going forward? I'm just kind of at a standstill where I want to proceed from here. So, well,
you know what,
yeah, any help?
You know what these two guys are going to suggest? They're definitely going to push you. They're going to push you in the direction of the powerlifting.
Not necessarily.
I think they're both incredible for different reasons, right? Like, I think there's a lot of value in both. I think, and it sounds like you have a really good mindset around health, fitness, and exercise. And so I would think that you're probably a good candidate for somebody who would want to try and do bodybuilding, you know, going with the attitude and the approach of, hey, I just like treating it like an experiment and learning about nutrition and taking it to that level. I mean, to this day, I think that period of time in my life taught me more about nutrition than all my prior certifications and years experience with regular clients. I mean, it forced me to really dive into the nitty gritty of understanding nutrition and how it affects the body and then feeling it going through it. So I saw tremendous value. And I think I've been a better communicator around nutrition because of it. So I love that, right? But I also think that powerlifting you want to talk about having to know your programming really well. Like powerlifting, there's no room for like bodybuilding. There's no room for error in nutrition. You can have a subpar programming, but if you're dialed nutritionally, you're going to bring a good physique. Powerlifting is the opposite. You can have kind of subpar nutrition, but you got to be dialed in programming. So they, in my opinion, they both are incredibly valued for different reasons. I guess the question I would ask you is, which one do you excite you more to learn about right now? And maybe you end up doing both, but which one do you want to focus on? And then we talk about like how you approach that.
Abby, if you're going to compete, if this is going to be something you're going to do competitions in, then I'll pick powerlifting. It's going to be a healthier sport. Bodybuilding competition is just not a healthy, it's not mentally healthy for people, especially for women. If you're not going to compete, if it's just for you, and it's a question of the training and the focus, bodybuilding is very healthy. Bodybuilding is easy on the body. It's easier on the joints than powerlifting. Yep. You learn great technique with exercise, you know, diet. It's all awesome. So if you're not going to compete, if this is just for you, then I would pick powerlifting. Now, the other thing is that you're in the fitness industry and you're working as a coach and a trainer. You're probably going to want to do all of it. You know, you go through a phase of bodybuilding, go through a phase of powerlifting. Weightlifting is the highest skill demands of all of the lifting sports. But being a high-level athlete, you might like that. You might like the skill aspect of it. A lot of people don't have the patience to perfect the skill of weightlifting because it takes a long time to get really good at weightlifting, far longer than any other conventional lifts. But if it's just for you, like have a good time. If you have to pick one and it's just for you and you want the healthiest one, bodybuilding. If you're going to compete, powerlifting. If it's all for you and you're not competing, I think you should do all of it.
Yeah, surprisingly, I would probably lean first with bodybuilding. And I know it's surprising, but the reason is because you're a trainer. And I feel like it's probably the most relevant in terms of, you know, you getting your average client and being able to go through that process yourself of being, dialed in terms of like, you know, how each, how nutrition's really affecting you and your performance, like in the gym and how you can kind of move and
body composition,
and body composition is just a huge pursuit. Most people are going to come in to you wanting to, nail down. And so I think it's like, and too, I watched Adam go through that and just how he geek out on like, you know, just having enough water and, you know, and how that, all that stuff, like you can kind of communicate that so much better in terms of like, maybe it's sodium, maybe it's this, maybe it's that you're feeling, out of shape and bloated and this and that. And so I think for talking points, I think, and two, it's a bit less, like in terms of risk reward with clients, I think that, bodybuilding provides a little bit more, less risk and more result. But in terms of the actual powerlifting for you individually, that's where I would go if it's like a total individual pursuit. It's not much different than their answers, but in terms of where I see it as a coach, I would probably lean there first just to be able to be a better communicator.
It does sound like we're all on kind of the same page, and it really comes back to, are you doing this more for the, you know, competitive Abby, and so you want to choose something that interests you competitively, or are you doing this because you want to enhance your skills as a trainer? Because that is probably how I would decide.
Are you going to compete in any of these, or is this all just for you?
So for bodybuilding, like I'd probably just do that for my own knowledge, own experience. But if I did do powerlifting, I probably would try to get in a competition or two just to push myself a little bit more. But if it was bodybuilding, I'd probably just do my own journey with that.
All right. Well, okay. Then do this. Start with bodybuilding for yourself. And when you get that, because you're an athlete, you've been training, you've been competing for years.
Yeah.
You're going to get the itch to compete. Okay. Then go to powerlifting and compete. Don't compete in bodybuilding. Getting on stage, getting judged by your appearance. This is like a road to terrible relationship with exercise and diet. So I would say go bodybuilding. And then when you're like, you know what, I want to compete, just go to powerlifting. By the way, the same exercise in powerlifting you're going to use in bodybuilding as well. So it's not that hard of a transition. It's just a focus on technique is different and the programming changes a bit.
Yeah, so I guess... I'm shocked y'all said that. I listen to so many of your podcasts where y'all usually lean the opposite direction. I listened to one the other day, y'all's powerlifting versus bodybuilding. I'm like, oh, they're for sure going to tell me to go powerlifting. So I'm shocked, but I'm like secretly excited. Like I wanted y'all to say this, but I guess from here, like, how do I approach my training and nutrition? Because I'm kind of going to do this like on my own research. I'm not going to hire, a coach or anything. So I guess a couple guidance points to help me out.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me get Doug to put you in our private forum if you're not already in there, because we have a lot of trainers that have competed and there's actually clients of mine that I've helped do a bikini show, do stuff. So definitely a great community. If you're going to be doing this on your own and not hiring a coach, that is going to be a great resource for you to just like ask people what their experience is like.
Yeah.
A lot of trainers that have done it inside that forum. So definitely utilize that in the community. If you're not watching the series I'm doing on YouTube, you should definitely be watching that, because that's kind of similar to that, right? The part that's most important, I always tell people when it comes to competing in bodybuilding, It's really setting yourself up. That the real work is done before you go into prep. The diet part of cutting calories, increasing movement, and you know that stuff is literally just shredding you down and revealing the work that you've put into building your metabolism, building your body. So really, the work is before the prep on that. And so, and a lot of that just, it comes down to how your training is right now. Where are you at metabolically? Like, are you in a healthy place calorie wise? Like, that would be very important. Like, I wouldn't even take a female client of mine if she told me, hey, I don't want to get ready for your bikini show. And I said, well, how many calories a day do you eat currently right now just to make your maintenance? And they'd say things like, oh, like 2,000, that's my maintenance. I'm like, yeah, you're not in a good place to do a cut. Like, I need to get your metabolism up to 2,600, 2,800 calories plus if I'm going to put you in a cut like that for that long of a period of time. So that is the stuff that you should be doing right now, is tracking calories, finding out what is your maintenance, getting yourself up to a healthy place metabolically to prepare yourself for an extended cut.
Yeah. Since you're not going to compete in bodybuilding, just I would say go with that. And in programming wise, start with MAPS Anabolic, do the 3-day a week version.
And then aesthetic.
And then you can either do aesthetic or symmetry afterwards. But that'll give you a nice, a nice solid foundation. The roadblocks, now here's going to be your roadblocks, is going to be try not to overdo the volume. Bodybuilding can get carried away with just ridiculous amounts of volume and splits and stuff like that. So if you start to notice your strength isn't improving, you're starting to feel fatigued, your sleep is off, then you probably need to drop the volume.
I don't know if you've been listening to us, I don't know how long, but we documented on the podcast my journey. I think it was Adam's Road to Pro, we called it. What was that called? Oh. So you could go back. You know, we were really bad at podcasting, but we do share the whole journey of me dieting and on the show. So there's a whole series of, I don't know, maybe 10 podcast episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think we called it Adam's Journey to Pro or Road to Pro or something like that. Like, so if you go back. It's like Road to Pro, something like that. If you use the ask mindpump.com and look for, you know, Adam's Road to Pro or Bodybuilding, you'll see a series of episodes that you can listen to too.
But do you have, do you have MAPS Anabolic, Abby?
Yeah, I just started phase 3 of Anabolic. I have aesthetic.
Do you have symmetry?
I do not have symmetry.
All right. I'll send you symmetry. You're going to like that program.
Okay. Well, so is there a specific order I should be? So I'm on anabolic now, so I finish in, I guess, 3 weeks. So go to aesthetic or go to symmetry?
I like symmetry next while you're tracking your calories, figuring out where your maintenance is, building your metabolism up. And then when you start what would be your prep, even though you're not going to get ready for show, but if you decide, okay, hey, I'm ready to start this cut, I've figured out my caloric maintenance, I've been tracking my steps, I kind of know where my movement is, okay, I'm ready to start the quote unquote real diet to get ready to get lean and ripped, then I would transition into MAPS aesthetic.
Okay. And I have a rough estimate. My maintenance is 2,300. I maintain there around a couple for probably 3 months and stay at the same body mass, muscle mass, body fat. And I just recently, probably last week, I was like, okay, I'm gonna cut here. I dropped 500. So I just this past week, I've been going at 1,800. Not super strict. I haven't been doing it to the T, but I've been more mindful.
Where's your body fat percentage right now?
21.4.
Yeah, reverse diet.
Yeah, I would reverse diet.
Yeah, start getting your calories up. Reverse diet through this whole process.
Yes. So this would be the recommendation. Follow MAP symmetry after anabolic with the intent of trying to increase your calories week over week, just slowly, 200 calories, 200 more calories. And I'd like, if you're in the low 20%, and we want to cut for a show, I probably want you at least 2,500 calories plus for your maintenance. That's a healthier place.
You're not going to gain body fat, River. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to reverse diet. You're just going to build strength and muscle. I don't think your body fat will even go
up. And the reason for that, Abby, is if you're at 21% right now, and let's say your maintenance is 22 and you cut to 1,800, you're going to lean out a little bit, but then you're going to hit a plateau. And you're going to hit a plateau probably somewhere around 19% body fat or so. And if you're trying to get like bikini ripped, you're going to want to be lower than that. And then where are we going to go from there? Down to 1,500? Like, so it doesn't give you a lot of runway. I'd want you up 2,500 plus calories before I start putting you on a cut for a show. So that, and this is what I mean by, this is where the real work is done. The real work is in setting yourself up metabolically before you get ready for a prep. And all the prep really is revealing all your hard work, is showing the physique that you built and how good of a job you did at building your metabolism. That's the real work.
Okay. So symmetry after this,
reverse diet.
We're going 200 ish calories a week.
One to 200 a week.
Yep.
Until I get 26.
At least around there, you know, like I want you to be up at a place where you feel, I mean, a perfect place is actually pushing you to where you're like, Adam, I can't eat anymore.
I would be surprised if you couldn't get yourself up to 28 even without gaining much body fat at all.
I think so too.
You're just going to get really strong, especially with your pedigree. I think you're going to get real strong from doing that.
And again, use the forum, because obviously we're giving you kind of generic numbers and answers right now off just to give you some sort of guidance, but we don't know for sure where that's going to land, right? Obviously your feedback is going to dictate where we go. So just keep us up to date in the forum. Let us know, hey, this is what I'm doing right now. And then tag us and ask other people's opinion. And trust me, people that have done this will be quick to chime in and give your opinion.
Okay. Right. Awesome. Well, I'm excited. Y'all told me what I wanted to hear. So I'm ready to go. I appreciate y'all.
Right, thank you, Abby.
Good luck, Abby.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. If you're not going to compete, bodybuilding training has got better longevity than powerlifting and weightlifting.
Yeah. Well, the reason I went that direction with her too, she's an athlete. She's been doing like that kind of performance training for so long. She needs to be well versed, because like your average person, you know, they're going to come in with these body composition goals, and it's like, you know, what a better way to address it.
I mean, I think that's the best point that you made, was that really, when you think, if you're a trainer, you're going to get way more value at understanding how to manipulate diet and nutrition for body composition than you are powerlifting. A fact.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just going to, most people, 80% of your clients that hire you are going to want to lose body fat. And so understanding how to build a metabolism.
And bodybuilding is still strength training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You're still doing a lot of the important lifts, but so much of training clients is nutrition heavy, and you're going to get so much more of that from that.
Our next caller is Brian from Illinois.
What's up, Brian? How can we help you?
Gentlemen, I am so excited to talk to you. Right. I got to thank the four of you for creating something amazing with Mind Pump. I got to thank Doug, too. Appreciate the invite to get on here. I found your podcast about 4 years ago, and I have said so many times, I wish I had this kind of info in my 20s. I really do. I could have been somebody, Justin. I could have been somebody.
Hey, man. I say the same thing all the time.
I'm 45 years old. I understand I'm late to the party. The question I sent in is about maybe failing a bulk. Maybe I ran it too long. I don't know what I'm doing. I'll give you some context if it helps. I was always a skinny fat kid. When I graduated high school, I fell in love with running, and that's how I stayed lean for a lot of years. I probably did 20 miles a week, but I'm a small guy. I'm 5'8". Back then I was 165 pounds. Eventually I found P90X, and that's what gave me a love for push-ups and pull-ups. But I also had a love-hate relationship with P90X. I never could complete the 90 days. I could do it for 60 days, and I would just quit, because I feel like it would take part of your life away. Listening to you guys, now I understand I was very, very overtrained. But I cycled that for years. I'm in that category. You don't know what you don't know, I guess. Fast forward. With the COVID lockdowns, and I know you guys have heard this probably too much, but I noticed I was getting really soft. My wife came across something once, and it said COVID will turn you into a hunk, a chunk, or a drunk.
I haven't heard that yet.
I'm working on the chunk part, you know?
Yeah, I haven't heard that.
Well, that's when I found your podcast.
Okay.
And for the first time, I started lifting with rest periods. And I did make some good progress from maybe 2020 through 2022. Late in 22, I think you had an episode on bulking. And I've never done this before. I've never tried to gain weight, you know, like on purpose. So January 2023, I started my first bulk. I think I added maybe a couple hundred calories a week in the beginning. I started probably around 2,300, maybe 2,500, and I got up to 3,700 calories. I went from January 1st, 2023 into this year, and by April, I was so sick to death of eating all the time, I gave up. I started off at 174 pounds, and I don't know why. I just got in my head, maybe I can get up to 190. You know, as a small guy, that just seemed incredible to me to get up that big. I tapped out at 186. I just couldn't eat anymore. So I'm curious, did I run the bulk for too long? Did I just not eat enough? Was programming an issue? Any insight?
Well, let's talk about, I don't necessarily think you did wrong or bad. Yeah. I mean, how did your body, what happened with your body fat percentage on the journey of gaining all that? Because you went from 174 to 186, right? Is that what I heard correctly?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. This is the biggest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah. Okay. So you got all the way up to 186. You've taken your calories from 2,300 to 3,700. If you did a pretty good job of not putting on a ton of body fat along the way, you crushed it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you put on more body fat than you put on muscle, well, then we did some things wrong. So have you tested? Do you have any idea on what the body fat percentage was before and now?
I got one of those cheesy scales, and it pretty much stayed the same, right around 20%. I can't say there was a big change.
Okay, so that's pretty damn good. I mean, the fact that you were able to put on that much muscle.
And your strength went up a lot?
I don't know. I'm 45, like I said. I've never done a PR. I've never done that kind of thing. My lifts, I guess, went up a little bit. I just now got a gym membership. First time in my life, a couple months ago, a gym opened up close to the house. So I have access now to a squat rack. I don't have a squat rack at home. I've got dumbbells, bench, dip station, pull-up bar, you know. So I'm happy to add squats in for the first time.
Oh, that's going to be a big deal.
That's going to be huge. I mean, yeah. if you see strength gains and you're not gaining body fat or a ton of body fat, you did a good job.
Great measures.
Yeah. You know, this, the thing with calories is it doesn't work. It doesn't always work linearly, right? So people think that if I just keep increasing the calories, I'm going to keep, my body's going to keep responding the way that there's a limit to how the body's going to respond. Typically, when there's a plateau with high calories, then you want to go down into a little cut and change your programming. Typically, it has to do with workout programming. Now, you didn't have a squat rack back then. What were you doing? What did your workout look like? Were you following one of our programs or something else?
I tried. I do have some of your programs. I'm not a mooch, Sal. I've got 15 I bought for the wife. She's enjoying it. I got 15 Symmetry, Aesthetics, and HIIT.
Okay.
I tried doing aesthetics. My difficulty, I think,
that's a lot.
Part of my difficulty is time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot, man.
I get up a quarter to five every morning, and that's how I squeeze in a workout. Working commercial construction, I'm a tile setter, and in addition to that, I'm a full-time volunteer minister. So I finally figured out the only way I can get a workout in is if I do it before work. There's just no gas in the tank when I get home from work. I've just realized that over the years. I've been really consistent for 4 years, but I'm only doing about 30 minutes a morning, 6 days a week, 30 minutes a morning.
Yeah, I mean, that's, follow that's, Mass 15 Advanced program. Advanced is perfect for you.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
You're going to love that.
And now that you've added squats, having squats to your routine is going to be massive. I mean, you're talking about the single best exercise that somebody can do trying to pursue building muscle and or losing body fat and just overall strength. Mm-hmm. That alone, and Mass 15, it's built around the most important exercises, right? That program, the thought process for us was writing a minimalist program. What if we had to write something that somebody only had 20 minutes or so to work out? What are the exercises we definitely want them to do to get to gain the most, get the most bang for their buck? That's what that program is. It's perfect for your time constraint. It's perfect for where you're currently at. And now that you're adding squats, let it do its work. It's going to do phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And what I do with you calorie wise right now, I don't want you really bulking or cutting. Eat when you're hungry, make good food choices, protein centric.
Yes.
Hit your protein intake. That's the number one priority. Is consistently, not sometimes, not an average, every day, hit your protein intake and make every meal that you choose to eat protein-centric. And when you're hungry, I want you to eat, but make it centered around protein. So if you feel like you're hungry, it's 8 o'clock at night and normally you wouldn't, go eat, but make it a protein centric meal. So, you know, my favorite thing late at night, like that's my Greek yogurt thing you might see me do. Like that's, so make those types of choices and let the programming do its work and don't actually overcomplicate or overthink the calorie thing. Just eat when you're hungry, protein centric meals, watch what will happen.
Okay. I like that. I have tried logging. I haven't logged in a while, but when I would do an online calculator, it would say my maintenance is roughly 2,700 calories. I feel like that's nonsense because if I try to eat 2,700 calories and log it, by the time it's bedtime, I'm so hungry I could eat my own teeth.
Yeah, yeah. Those things are so
they're inaccurate.
They're so inaccurate and generic, and it doesn't. The only reason why I like trackers is so you can see you inputting your own food and tracking yourself. What they kick back and tell you you should or shouldn't eat, or what it estimates you're burning, I don't pay any attention to that. It's like, eat the best way you're going to find out about where your maintenance is by doing exactly what I said, is eating when you're hungry, making good choices, and then look at after a week about where you land.
And then there's your average.
And there's your average. That's probably where your maintenance average is. But the key is going to be consistently not missing protein, because you're now training the way I'd want you to train. You're adding squats and this is going to be huge. So long as you hit that protein intake, we're going to build muscle and you're going to just slowly lean out while also hopefully getting stronger. That's the goal.
Okay. I will give it a shot.
You got it.
I have a weakness, it's probably my weekends. I don't go off the rails on the weekends. I don't think I eat enough on the weekends.
That's
Monday through Friday, I'm structured really well. Mm-hmm. I bring my food to work. I've got everything I need. Saturday, Sunday, sometimes I get two meals in, maybe three.
Start the day off with the early high protein breakfast.
And Brian, I'm glad you brought that up because this is huge. And you've probably heard me talk about this on the show. Like I have a saying, win the weekend, right? Like winning the weekends would set the tone for my entire week. Cause I, just like you, I was dialed during the week. I'm on my schedule. So I meals are ready. I hit everything consistently, but on Saturday and Sunday. And just like you, it wasn't like I would eat like an asshole. It's that I would miss meals. I wouldn't hit my protein intake, and you can't do that. If you do that, it's going to really count. It's really going to cancel out a lot of the great work we're doing during the week. So the most important thing is to hit that protein intake on Saturday and Sunday. And like Sal said, make that first breakfast meal a big protein meal, because if there's anything that will slow down your progress of building muscle, speeding that metabolism up, is going to be missing every Saturday and Sunday on protein.
Okay. Sounds good. I have a new goal.
And since you have all the programs that you already need, are you in our private forum yet?
No, I'm not.
I'm going to have Doug give you access to that. And then if you just check in with us, okay, every few weeks or every at least once a month, letting us kind of know what you're seeing, what you're noticing, how you feel, we can kind of give you guidance along the way of, oh, add more of this, cut this. So we'll guide you along the way if you update and you let us know how you're doing.
Okay, will do. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate
all right, Brian. It, excited for
John
you,
Brian.
P90X is one of the highest selling digital workout programs of all time. Ever. It also is simultaneously the worst programming. The worst.
Yeah.
It is terrible. I remember I had a client when it first came out.
My dad was
showed it to me. With that. And I was like, oh, they're just like trying to beat you up.
On everything else.
Yeah, they're just trying to beat you up by stringing a bunch of stuff together. And unfortunately, people believe that the harder a workout is and the more they feel like throwing up, the better it is. Mm. So it just confirmed their bias that this is a good workout. Well,
that was where the whole muscle confusion.
Yeah, and then I guarantee a huge cohort of people did the same thing that he did. And so they feel like the reason why it didn't work was because they didn't finish it.
Yeah. Or they did lose weight, but then they stopped because it overtrained them or whatever, and they gained the weight back. And it's like,
I'm not good enough. That's not the
but
issue.
I tell you what, I hope Brian listens to this. I hope Brian follows through on this, because the advice we gave, if he wasn't doing squats, he was able to already reverse diet as well as he did. He follows MAPS 15. And he starts squatting and he does not miss his protein intake.
He'll gain 8 to 10 pounds of muscle.
It'll radically change his physique. I guarantee it.
Our next caller is Michelle from Missouri.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
We're good.
Good. Okay. So my question is, I'm turning 50 this year and I'm not going to lie, I'm a little freaked out. I've never cared about age, but the big 5-0, there's just something about it. And I told my girlfriends, I have a year to get my shit together. So I've always been consistent with cardio, but not so much on weights. So of all your programs, which ones would you recommend for someone who wants to be consistent, but is terrified of injuring themselves?
Oh, 40 plus. I love you. Yeah. You know, okay. So what's your experience with strength training? Do you do any of it consistently, or is it very, very minimal?
It's very minimal. And here's why. So I hired a trainer about 20 years ago, and it's everything you guys always talk about, how trainers. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And so I actually injured myself. And since then, I have just kind of done my own thing, but not very much, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry about that. So, okay. Starter.
Starter, yeah.
Starter would be perfect for you. Absolutely perfect. All you need are dumbbells and a physio ball. Or you can go to the gym. They'll definitely have dumbbells and a physio ball, but it's the perfect program to start with. And Michelle, when you do it, really focus on technique and control.
Yep.
And control.
Nice slow cadence.
And remember, the feel that you're looking for from strength training is very different than the feel that you're used to from cardio. You're not looking for like this exhaustion. You're looking for some exertion during the set, and then you rest. And then you rest fully for like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then you do the next set. It is a completely different feeling. You should feel very invigorated and energized at the end. And a little bit of soreness the next day is okay. But if you get really sore the next day, then you probably pushed it too hard.
You've probably heard us say many times is about when you get into the workout, approach it like practice. And when I have a client that I'm really introducing strength training to, like yourself, the thing that I would tell you is I want you to be obsessed about the movement, and I want you to use the models in the video, and I don't care about the weight. I don't care about your heart rate. I don't care about sweat. Mm-hmm. What I want you to do is when you watch that model do the exercise, you want to be able to mirror it perfectly and become obsessed with that, like trying to make it look exactly how she is doing it in the video, because your technique and form is far more important than heart rate and calories and all the things that you tend to kind of focus on when we're doing cardio type stuff. Mm-hmm. Totally opposite intent going into it. That is going to serve you the most, is get good at perfecting the movement.
That's it. And Michelle, you're saying, so what do you mean specifically when you say get your shit together? What are you looking, like, what do you want out of this? Because I would also like to look into what you're doing for cardio and sleep, because there's a whole picture here, not just the strength
training. Lifestyle,
So what do you mean by that? What do you mean by get my shit together?
All of that. So I listen to you guys and I hear you say that about the whole package, you know, and as someone that has narcolepsy, the sleep part has always been very, very important to me. So I feel like that I have actually consistently nailed down.
Great.
And as far as the eating, I'm a recovering vegan.
Okay.
And I say recovering. I was a vegan for about 10 years, and that's actually another question I had. So I recently reintroduced, after listening to you guys, chicken back into my diet, but red meat still makes me very nauseous.
That's fine. No worries. You do eggs,
fish?
Yes, I can do eggs and fish. Okay. But I'm still struggling to get 125 grams of protein each
how
day.
Much protein can you get from food? Where what are you hitting?
I'm probably getting about 80 to 90.
Okay,
so just from food with no shakes? That's just from food?
No, that's with a shake.
Okay, that's with a shake. Okay. And how many grams of protein is your shake?
20
grams. Oh.
Is it whey protein?
Add another shake. Add another shake or two. You're fine. And if you can get it if you can get it from Whole Food, that would be the best. Okay. But if you can't, and I've worked with a lot of vegans and then people who went from vegan to omnivore, so I totally get it. It's like your palate has to change. And there's a repulsion that kind of happens, especially in those early days. I love eggs. That's going to be your best source of protein. Chicken's eggs, great.
Fish and chicken is going to be
great. Fish is great.
Ground turkey, if you'll have turkey and things like that. I don't know if you'll have that. That's also a great choice.
Supplementing with creatine is going to be very beneficial for someone like you.
Creatine.
You'll probably notice cognitive benefits, energy benefits. It's a very, very good longevity supplement. But you're also going to notice strength from it. You're going to get stronger from it. But longevity-wise, it's amazing. And the people that benefit the most from creatine are people who have the least amount of animal protein or animal sources of food in their diet, because that's typically where you get it from. Otherwise, your body has to synthesize protein from amino acids, and it just doesn't get enough creatine in that way. And so you tend to see cognitive improvements even.
If I can give two pieces of advice that I think will make the most important difference in this journey for you, it's the giving you the tip about treating every exercise like practice and caring more about the form and technique. And then the second one is making it like your job to hit protein every day. Just and that, because they work together. And if you're doing this, if you're working out and you're lifting weights, but then we are very inconsistent with the protein, then you're not going to reap all the benefits from the lifting the weights. But if you practice lifting weights and you hit that protein consistently, you're going to reap all the benefits from the strength training.
Yeah.
And
so do the protein, creatine, what Adam said with the strength training. And then let's talk about your cardio. What does your cardio look like? Because you said you're doing that and you're consistent. What does that look like?
Yeah. So every day I walk about 2 miles that's either just outside or on the treadmill.
Oh,
I love that. Yeah, I love that.
Keep it.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You're going to really love how your body responds if you're consistent with this. It is going to be transformative for you, Michelle. I had a lot of clients just like you. We're in the same kind of like age group, and in our generation, especially women, they were discouraged from strength training. They were discouraged even from eating animal sources of protein and fat and all that stuff. So just doing those things, you're gonna notice like some really nice changes to your body. And it's not gonna feel like you're forcing yourself. So it should feel like, wow, I feel good. Like, wow, this is, my body's responding. I feel great. I don't chase the intensity like you're trying to beat yourself up. That'll steer you in the wrong direction. So just start the program, practice the techniques. You can make it challenging, but the technique comes first. Make sure the skill is good and challenge yourself a little bit and you'll get stronger. You're going to get stronger week over week, especially because you're just getting started. Hit the protein. Go ahead and add another shake if you can't get it from food. Add another 2 or 3 shakes. You can even add another 2 shakes if they're only 20 grams. Take the creatine. You're going to blow yourself away.
Quick question. The creatine is new to me. So is that powder? Is that...
You can take it in powder form.
Legion just came out with gummies.
Yeah, or you can do in gummy form.
Oh, that's it. You have, right? Okay. Yeah, so real easy to take. Tastes good. I'm a fan.
We like Legion because we know that they're quality. But creatine monohydrate, you don't want any other source. That's the one that's been studied over 1,000 peer-reviewed studies. There's all these other sources trying to tell you that there's different, you know, better. There aren't no better. It's creatine monohydrate is what you want.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
I'm excited for you, Michelle.
Do you have?
I would love for you to follow up with us in like 30 to 60 days after doing this.
Are we sending you starter? Do you have that program?
I do not have it.
Okay, well, let's send that to you. And then can I put, I want to follow up. I want to follow up on you just to see this, because this gets me really excited.
Yeah.
Can we put you on our forum and then you just every 30 days or so check in with us, let us know how it's going?
I would love to. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
All right. Happy birthday.
Michelle. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
You got it. Yeah,
thanks.
Man, I hope she follows through.
Those are the kind of clients.
Radically changing.
She would hire me and I would get
a drastic shift.
I would get so excited. It's like she's about to like, everything's going to blow her mind.
Yeah.
It's going to blow
her mind.
Especially
if you had a bad experience, you know.
That makes me so upset.
I know.
This is why.
I mean, that happened to a lot of people.
I know. I did that early on. I know I did that to some clients early on where I gave them a bad experience. And it makes me really upset because then they don't go back.
I know that she has this like, I gave my shit together, but the cool part about this is she is primed to see amazing results.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
An ex-vegan, so probably grossly under-eating protein forever like that, not getting her body what she needs nutritionally. So switching out of that already super positive. Never really done strength training. 20 years ago, had a bad experience and then ran away from it since then. Just a little bit of strength training paired with hitting protein into it, and she's going to completely shift the way she looks and feels.
And I'll tell you what, I've had vegans go on creatine. Most people get great, you know, results from creatine. Vegans, it's mind-blowing.
It is.
They notice a huge difference. And there's studies that show IQ boosts from
it. It's a major boost,
Our next caller is Dana from Canada.
Hi, Dana.
Hello.
What's happening?
Hi there. I just wanted to start off by saying how much I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. I've been listening for about 2 years, and after quoting you guys nonstop, my husband just decided to listen to the podcast instead. So now every week I get a new package on my doorstep from one of your partners that he just has to try.
He's like, who are these guys she's talking about? That's awesome.
Okay, so do you want me to just read my email?
Yes, please.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. I'm a 31-year-old mom of two. I'm 5'6 and 127 pounds. I've been lifting weights for about 10 years, but with actual good programming for about 2 years. I've run anabolic performance and aesthetic, and I'm currently on phase two of powerlift. I get between 12 to 15,000 steps daily, and I also do 2 5-minute sessions of mobility. My sleep is good, 8 to 9 hours, and I consistently take creatine. My calories are 2,800 at maintenance, and I've been tracking for years. I always hit my protein goal of 150 grams and like quite easily, and my weight is stable. I'm getting a little stronger in the gym, mostly eating whole foods and maybe one protein shake a week, and I don't know my body fat percentage. My questions are, why am I still hungry? Do I need to bump my calories even more? And my second question is, I constantly hear a lot of women maintaining around 2,000 calories. Why am I so much higher? And I'm not complaining at all.
Yeah, because you're healthier.
After you were reading everything, I'm like, what is she going to ask us?
Yeah, she's kicking ass. Yeah, yeah. It's because you're very healthy. You got a very healthy metabolism, and you're probably realizing that when you hit the weights, sometimes the body's saying you could handle more calories.
Yeah, you're fit as hell too. Yeah. You sent a picture in. You're very fit. You got good muscle. You're hungry because your body wants to build more muscle.
Yep.
So your body's like, hey, give us a little more food. Go ahead, eat more, make it whole natural foods, protein centric again, and you're just going to get stronger. You're going to get even stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing great. What are your calories at again?
2,800, bro.
Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. You're fine.
That's incredible. Yeah. You're in a great place.
No, there's nothing at all wrong with
that. I mean, where you are at is where we want to take most clients. When someone hires us and they're at, like you said, because it is very common that your female client comes in and says, oh, I only eat about 1,800, 2,000 calories and I want to lose a bunch of body fat, and we got to reverse diet them and get them up somewhere healthy metabolically, you're there. I mean, you're in an incredible place right now. And what you feel is exactly what Sal's saying, is you're probably training very well. And when you stimulate it, the body's going, ooh, we can handle more calories. I want to build more muscle. So if you want to build more muscle and would like to get stronger, that would be the answer. If you're happy where you're at, then, you know, it's not uncommon to have times where you're a little bit lower than your maintenance and you're feeling hungry.
How recent was it, the picture that you sent us?
That was June.
Okay. So, and are you around the same as from that?
Yeah. I was eating about 2,500 in that picture. I went to 2,800 in July.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't gain any weight. Yeah. And I did it gradually, about 100 calories until I got to 2,800. Okay. And I didn't gain any weight. And I actually think I look leaner.
Yeah, that picture looked like, maybe Doug, pull that up again. You look like you're in the
more
teens.
More lean muscle.
Yeah, you look like you're in the teens, maybe 17%. If your sleep is good, libido's good. If you have a regular menstrual cycle, I mean, here's what I would advise someone like you. I would advise someone like you, if you're hungry, just eat whole natural foods. You're not going to go wrong.
Let me ask this. How is your relationship with food? Do you feel like you're very obsessive with making sure you eat perfect? Do you allow yourself some flexibility to eat out of bounds? Or does that freak you out? Like how, tell me a little bit about that.
So I will say we go out to eat probably once a week.
Okay.
And, I will track the whole day and then I'll just leave like 1,000 calories. And I usually pick the cleanest thing on the menu. So I wouldn't say that I eat a lot of junk ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm hesitant towards it. I prefer whole foods. So I would say that I don't like junk. Well, that's what actually my husband would say. And I just prefer whole foods.
If you're not stressed out about it, you're fine.
That's all I was looking for. I was looking because sometimes I'll get a client, they're obsessive about the food they're eating and it stresses them out if they eat out of bounds. And so that would be my only thing, is maybe peering into that. But it sounds like you have a really good relationship with food. It sounds like you prefer whole foods.
If you were my client, I would just say, oh, you're hungry? Eat more.
Yeah.
Eat another whole food meal option, and you'll be totally fine.
I will say I do use a food scale every day and I do track it. So, okay.
I mean, it might be a good exercise for you to not for a little while.
Yeah, try a couple days where you don't track. Yeah.
You're in such a healthy place metabolically that I think as long as you know that you're getting protein-centric meals, strength training, you probably are going to maintain just fine and not have to do all that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the only exercise. If you're my client, we've been together for a long time and you look like you look and you feel the way you feel, I'd say, hey, let's go for a couple weeks and not weigh and measure anything. Let's just see.
And if you want to. And how are you on vacation? Do you stress out or you just enjoy yourself?
I just eat healthy, way more, of course, as we all do. I drink, I eat.
You're fine.
It's not really a problem.
Yeah.
You're totally fine. You're killing it. You're crushing it.
Yep.
If you're hungry, eat more. You're going to be told you'll just get stronger.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I wish I could give you something different to do, but you're doing great.
No. I think it'd be good exercise to go for some time without tracking. That's about the only piece of advice I'd have
for you. We're nitpicking here.
Yeah. And that literally is not because you have to. It's just, I think it's a good exercise. I think it's good for us, especially if you know that you've been very consistent with tracking and measuring for a long time. I think it's a good exercise to move away from that a little bit and just see how you feel and try and listen to your body and see if you can still maintain that same feeling and healthiness. I think that's a good exercise for you to do. So you don't have, because you're at a place right now where I don't think you even need to probably weigh, measure and track as much as you are. You've obviously proven you've been able to maintain a very healthy, fit, strong physique and be able to get away with eating, drinking and having fun and enjoy yourself. So, maybe pull back a little bit on the tracking and weighing. And just kind of and see how you feel for a month.
Yep. Hit some PRs on powerlift.
So far, so good.
Right on.
Great. Man. Yeah, thanks for calling in.
You're killing it.
Good job.
Thank you so much.
You got it. Bye. Well, I mean, I like, every once in a while someone calling like that because that is, that's possible. It's possible to get to that place and you live that way and, she's tiny. She's eating almost 3,000 calories a day.
Yeah.
Strength training feels good, strong. That's the place where you want to be. And I think she's overthinking it with the, why am I still hungry? Eat, feed yourself. When you're like that, feed yourself and you'll end up getting more strong.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I feel like I can peer into you're looking at the pinnacle of what we want to take most of our female clients to get to, right? I mean, she's tiny, 127 pounds. Think about that for a second. She's a mom of two, and she's eating 2,800 calories with abs.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's so impressive.
She's leaner. Yeah.
The only thing that I would probably challenge her on is the let's not track for a while because
that can be like a handcuff.
Right. Maybe she's downplaying how obsessive she is about tracking. And that's about the, and again, here I am nitpicking. This is not me critiquing at all. It's just trying to guess off of a 5-minute phone call of where I could help her in her journey. Other than that, she's got it dialed. And this is a place that I want to get all of my clients to where they can have that much metabolic flexibility, feel that good, look that good, and desire. Sounds like she doesn't desire junk food. She desires healthy food. She chooses that because she likes it, not because she feels restricted.
It's not punishing yourself.
No, this is an incredible place to be.
Look, if you like the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano, and Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.